All right, back on the record, June 2nd, 2025, 10:45 a.m. The Silverview SEPA and conditional use permit appeals. Mr. Schutz was just wrapping up his testimony with Mr. Miller, so we'll continue with that.
And I apologize if it's not as quickly wrapping up as I had first said, but it shouldn't be too long.
All right.
Thank you. I am sharing again what is exhibit B1. Mr. Miller, we were just talking about the foundation required for two levels of under building parking. foundation, I guess, tell me how to think about it, how to ask this. Would foundation work for underbuilding parking be more than would be for the current garden style design?
Yeah, yes.
Would that include, well, let me, so as we see here, is the red line the current design?
I believe the red line is the current design, yes.
So what does it mean to have structured underbuilding parking as to the width of the building, or at least with regard to the width of the structured parking?
Well, relative to the current design, it means that, as I said earlier with, I think, Mr. Adams's exhibit, the current building sitting on structured parking would have to go through additional structural enhancement for the parking garages in order to transfer the vertical and seismic loads down and out of the building.
But for the structured parking itself, it would have to be a lot wider, wouldn't it?
In order to get the number of cars that would be required to be in the underbuilding parking, yeah, it would need to be wider.
So, and that's shown on this exhibit?
That is shown on this exhibit, yes.
Okay. And what are some of the problems with having a wider structured park, two levels of wider structured parking?
Well, let me talk about two levels first. The grade would, if you're out of grade on your structured parking, you know, just even say the upper level of structured parking is out of grade, it's going to be, I think, a less attractive building to the neighbors and to the people that are frankly going to rent here. You're potentially going to see, or you are going to see, lights and parking garage come on and off as cars transition, and potentially see headlights. You're superimposing on the site the structured parking that then requires, as I said earlier, you know, elevators, additional structural footings, the complication of getting the plumbing and waste piping and things like that out of the building without interfering with the garage clearances. And then again, the need for the elevator and the additional space you would be required to have for van parking, accessible van parking, excuse me.
So let me break that down. So visual impacts. You're talking about because of structured parking above grade?
Yes.
Okay.
The visual impact of structural parking above grade. I think it's a less successful design solution for this site than parking on grade for the residents who will be living at the site and also for the surrounding properties.
So it have worse visual impacts. Explain that a little bit more if you could. What would neighbors be looking at with structured parking above grade like this?
You're going to have a either a concrete or steel structure that is, the construction of the parking structure itself. That's quite a bit different from the aesthetic of a wood frame building. You might see that in a more urban environment where you've got maybe two levels of parking under a 5 or 6 story building, similar to what you might see in downtown Redmond or Belltown of Seattle, something like that. But you still have to ventilate the parking garage. And in that case, you'd probably ventilate the above grade level with screens, so openings on the sidewalls. And those screens have to be at least 50% open in order for them to meet code on the ventilation. So that means you're going to be seeing the lights potentially, and vehicles transitioning, and potentially headlights for the cars that are parking out, just like this diagram shows.
So, do you have an opinion on whether service parking with screening or the structured parking is a has more of an impact on neighbors? Negative impact, I would say.
I would say there's more of a negative impact with structured parking to the neighbors than there is for surface parking. I don't believe that surface parking will be visible to the neighbors because of
And you talk.
because of the landscaping and the grades.
Yeah. While we're on visual impacts, before I leave that, you would the buildings need to be taller as well?
Yes, if you're parking above grade, then you're going to have a taller building in order to have the 4 floors of residential above it. Yes.
Okay.
And this
And
diagram.
we talked about some of the problems with garden style on top of a podium of structured parking. And we'll get back to that in a minute. But for the elevator, you'd have a wider, bigger building on top of the structured parking as well, I think it was your testimony.
That's correct.
Okay, and what's your opinion with regard to that as to visual impacts on neighbors as compared to the current garden design?
Right. Well, so right now you have a 4-story building. It's thin. It sits pretty nicely on the site. I think the architecture is good. And now, when you have a 4-story building on top of 1 or 2 levels of parking, and even assuming it's one level, you're going to be at that another potentially 11 feet above grade or out of grade. So you're going to have a roof of that building 11 feet higher than it currently would be. So, the visual impact is 1 story greater and possibly 1.5 stories greater.
Okay, before I leave this exhibit, I want to talk about that you said that the foundation would be wider. Would it need to be deeper also?
Yeah, typically, wide footings. I'm not a structural engineer, so I think I would leave that question to the structural engineers. But I have seen, deeper footings underneath the parking structures because of the weight that they're carrying. You can widen them out, but and that covers more surface area, but I think they also need to be steeper. There's probably some sort of ratio that is a rule of thumb that works on that. But structural engineer would need to answer that question.
That's fair. I'm gonna stop sharing here. So we talked about what the buildings would look like with elevators. They'd be bigger, they'd be wider, they'd be a different kind of building altogether. We talked about with structured parking, the building would be also need to be higher. I think Mr. Adams has indicated that you wouldn't need to have the elevator go all the way up. You could just go up to the podium and walk up from there. We talked about stairs a little bit. I just want to touch on that before we leave this topic. What is the problem with 4 flights of stairs?
Well, You mean walking up four flights of stairs?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I don't think it would, you know, not a market analysis, but I don't think people would rent the top floor. So I don't think, I think it becomes infeasible from that point of view. So, you know, you carrying groceries or whatever up four flights of stairs. No, I don't think so. Right now, the building shows that you can walk straight in off grade to the basement level. You can walk straight in off grade to the second level, and you're only going up two flights of stairs to get to the top floor. So it's a four-story building, or three stories over a basement, if you want to be accurate about it. But the beauty of it is that it only requires the people in the upper floor to transition two levels of stairs instead of four.
So have you, in your experience, have you seen any newer buildings that have four flights of walk up?
No, not in this area, no.
I want to touch on costs. So I think you described that the certain costs associated with elevators. Let's talk about the parking itself. The report talks about additional cost of each parking stall. Do you recall what that number was and the number range?
I'd have to dig out the report, but I believe the number range was between $60,000 and $70,000 per stall in order to build them.
And where did you arrive? How did you arrive at that number, I should say?
Well, first of all, through my experience with designing and building buildings that have parking like this, I can maybe give you an anecdotal comment that I would tell my retirement client, you know, that it was way cheaper for them to buy the car from the resident than it was to build the parking spot for that car if it was under building. When I do a feasibility study, I'm always looking at cost. You know, cost is one of the drivers. And as I said earlier, any project that you're trying to understand whether it's feasible or not has to pencil out. The costs have to meet the goals and objectives for the project. So if it doesn't pencil out, then it doesn't work. So when I do feasibility studies, we would generally engage with a contractor or a cost estimating firm to understand what the costs are going to be for various projects and aspects of that project. And one of those is the garage, if we put a garage in a project. So when I started looking at the feasibility of this project with underbuilding parking, I got input from a couple of sources. One was a contractor that built a big project for me down in Gig Harbor, and they showed parking, underbuilding parking in the Puget Sound area, is what they said, would be about $63,000 per car. I then went to a guy named Kevin Mitchell, who is a principal at Ryder Lovett Becknell, and they are a national and international cost estimating firm with a big office in Seattle. And the amount of cost he told me was that $60,000 to $70,000 per car as a budget number. Now, it could vary a little bit, but I can tell you one thing: you get that number wrong and you go through the process of getting to permits and you end up finding out that your parking, you know, if you estimated it to be, you know, significantly lower than that, and you end up getting your building, or you're at building permits stage and you're getting estimates from your contractor and it's coming in twice what you thought it was, your project is going to be in big trouble. It won't be feasible.
So Adams, I think in Adams' report, he has a number of around 30,000. Is that inconsistent with your experience?
No, not for this type of site.
Say that one more time. So what I'm asking is, Adam says that structured parking for this site should only be around 30,000 per stall. Is that consistent with your experience?
No.
did you Do you know where he found that number, the 30,000?
I believe he gave a footnote to a website for a company called WGI.
Okay, and did you look at that?
I did.
Okay.
They give a construction cost for 2024 for various cities around the country, and they include Seattle. And I'm just looking right now. It shows $31,664 per stall. That's, in my mind, not accurate with what it would cost to go to build parking under building. They have a lot of caveats in that website that talk about what they would assume you would. The building would be in order to reach that low number.
What are some of those?
Some of those are, a flat site with no encumbrances. It's a precast concrete structure, pretty low floor to floor, small parking spaces, shallow spread footings or strip footings, all above grade construction, no below grade construction. So that would mean that there's no retaining wall, no dewatering. No soldier piles or anything like that. It's an open parking structure with no ventilation. So it's all naturally ventilated. Minimum grade change. So, there's just a lot of caveats in there. And WGI is an engineering firm that mostly does bridges and highways and associated buildings with that type of work.
Based on your review of the WGI site that was provided by Mr. Adams, was Did any of that parking that WGI contemplates have residential buildings on top?
Not from what was shown in their caveats, and they're actually, I think, on their website. I don't have that in front of me, but I think there was a rendering of a parking structure that was just pure parking structure, no building on top of it, a square box sitting on a flat piece of land.
So, do you have an opinion on whether the WGI is applicable to this site and this project?
Yeah, it's not.
Okay. We talked about the cost of elevators. Do we talk about the larger buildings? I mean, so larger buildings, there's costs associated with those as well.
If you put in an elevator, there's a cost of the elevator. Then there's the elevator lobby. Then there's the corridor that goes down the middle of the building to get you access to the apartment units on either side. There's also, the fire-rated stairs at either end. You're adding more square footage, to get, when you add the elevator.
So, do you have an opinion of whether this project on the site would be feasible with the added cost of structured parking, elevators, and additional construction involved with larger buildings?
Yeah, in my opinion, it would not be feasible. It would cost too much.
Okay. And what did you look at in coming to that determination?
Well, I know that even using the WGI numbers, the calculation I did showed that the cost of the construction would go up by around $5 or $6 million. And that's assuming, no excavation or anything like that. So if you were to look at the numbers I got from White's Construction, or the numbers from Leavitt Bucknell, the writer Leavitt Bucknell, it's more than double that. And so, I'm not the economist, I'm just the architect. But if I were to present those numbers to my client in a feasibility study, there would have to be a relook at how the site was going to be used because it's not feasible to add that amount of money in construction and cost and time that it would take to build the parking garage, all of that rolled in together is going to render the project infeasible. Just
and
on
that sort of, and that sort of analysis of whether it pencils out, you said that's part of your, you know, the foundation of a feasibility analysis as part of your work.
That's one of the most critical pieces of my work.
Okay, in your opinion, could you have, you know, garden style affordable houses where people could work and walk and live and shop in this area of Silverdale based on the costs that you just described for structured parking, elevators, et cetera?
No.
Okay, and why is that? And,
well, maybe repeat
well, I guess the question. I'm asking it. Sure. Could you get the rent? You know, what would the rents have to be with those costs associated with this project?
You know, I can't really speculate on the rents. I can tell you that, you know, I kind of keep tabs on things, but the rents that the other projects in Silverdale are charging seem to be in the, like, you know, $1,700 a month for, I think it's a 2-bedroom or a 1-bedroom, I'm not sure. That seems reasonable, but those are for walk-up garden style apartments. And the newer apartments up around Wagga Way development. So, you know, I would assume that's kind of where this rent is, but I'm not sure. I really don't know.
Okay. let's switch gears here for a second and share again. Looking at exhibit A7. This was provided by the appellants as a rebuttal exhibit. Am I showing that correctly?
Not yet. Oh, here it comes. Yeah. Yep, there it is.
Okay, thank you. I believe these were provided as examples of where you could have a three-story building over underground parking. Have you reviewed this exhibit?
Yes.
Okay, let's just take these briefly one by one. So is this example comparable, or what are some issues you have with this example as something that could be applied here at this site?
Are you talking about the top one?
Let's start with the top one. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I see some concerns with this. First of all, this building looks like it may have been built, you know, I don't know, but back in, certainly before the turn of the century, so maybe back in the 80s, 60s, 70s, 80s, I don't know. It's not a very handsome building. And, you know, the parking structure underneath it is a flat site, generally a flat site, it looks like. There's no slope. There's, you know, you can see the lights in there. I'm assuming that there's a corridor and a garage or elevator that goes up in the middle somewhere. You know, this building wouldn't have had the same seismic requirements that a building today would have, depending on when it was built. And even if it was built in the early 2000s, we would still have stronger seismic requirements than we have today for shear walls, especially. This building would not have had the same energy code requirements. And so when you when you have a parking garage that extends out like this one does to the left, you've got a breach of the slab, the top part of the slab, I'm assuming it's concrete. So the top part of the slab, will be a heat link into the apartments that are directly adjacent to it. So I'm talking about that right behind the telephone pole there. So anyway, I don't think it's a very good example. It's an oversimplification, I think, of what we would be required to do in on this site that slopes.
Okay, how about the second one?
So this gets to the comment about, you know, the exterior hallways, if you want to call them that, or circulation from stairway to stairway. So, you know, what this looks like to me is a cheap motel that was converted into something. I don't even know. Maybe it's still a cheap motel. I don't know. That's just my opinion. I mean, when I drive down to Portland, I see down around Centralia, you know, these two or three story motels that are walk-ups that have the balcony or the circulation on the outside, which gives no privacy to the resident. I wouldn't do this. Again, I think it's not a good example of what would be required on this site, because we have slope on our site, we have views from our site. It's just not a good example.
Do you know where this is located?
I don't. It's Lakeview Medical Dental, I think, but I don't know where it's located.
How about this example? I think the next necessarily use this image. Is this a comparable for this site?
Well, again, it's hard to say. I think this is a podium exposed. So you're coming in underneath, you probably got a garden on top. It looks like there's trees there. You know, again, we have slope on our site, so I don't think it's a good comparable.
Is it a lot? How does it compare look to that?
So that, you know, this building, I think, would have an elevator in it somewhere, probably back in the right rear of this image. Elevator lobby and that sort of thing to get up into the apartments. So a lot of corridors.
A lot different than what's proposed for this site with a garden style affordable units.
Yeah, I mean, again, the garden style apartments on this site are really kind of a perfect use of the site. You enter on the lower level, right off grade. You enter on the second level, right off grade, and you only have to go up two flights of stairs to get to the top floor. They follow the contours. They're simple. They sit lightly on the site. They're not going to impact the, you know, site in any great way, especially the aquifer that's underneath, which we heard earlier today. They have simple footings and foundations. It's just I can't think of a better solution for this site for a four-story building, which really becomes kind of a three-story building on the upper side and only two levels to transition to get up and down.
I think I know the answer to this, but in your opinion, could the garden style that you're talking about, garden style apartments, be feasible with structured under building parking on this site?
No, not the 45 foot wide garden style apartments that we're talking about.
Last topic I want to discuss. Is I'm going to share again, is the front yards. At the beginning of the hearing, the examiner discussed.
I like the penguin.
Yeah, thank you. So now it's on that page. Can you see that?
Just the file directory.
Gotcha. You think after 5-6 years of this, I'd be a little better at it, but so one of the things that was changed about the current design was an increase in the front yards, and this is exhibit B7. In part of this review, did you review the design standards 942 that talked about front yards?
I'm familiar with it, yeah.
Okay. And you review these images as well?
Yes.
Okay. And that was one. I'm not going to run through all of them. They're in the record, like I said, at B7. But do you have an opinion on whether this design meets the requirements of the design standards for the landscape front yards?
Yeah, I feel like it does. I mean, I think when I have looked at other apartments that have the same or similar standards, this actually is an enhanced front yard from what I've seen, again, up in the Wagga Way district. You know, it's nice landscaping. It's places for people to pull out and, talk like it's shown in this image. This looks like it's from the upper side of the site. So again, this kind of shows that whole stairway issue that I was talking about earlier as well.
The two stories.
Yeah, the two stories, yeah.
Is there anything, I was kind of jumping around, I realized, is there anything that you want to say with regard to your review that I wasn't able to touch on?
Well, I mean, I can state that in my opinion, the underbuilding parking on this site isn't feasible. I mean, it's not feasible because of cost. It's not feasible because of the potential impact on the fragile aquifer that sits below the site. It's not worth that risk. You know, it's really interesting that the state of Washington has looked at parking and looked at it in terms of affordability for housing. And everybody knows that the state of Washington and most states in this country have an issue with housing right now. So Senate Bill 5184 is called the Parking Reform and Modernization Act. And they passed that bill because they know that parking, especially underbuilding structured parking, is a cost that is forcing people out of apartment housing. There was really an interesting article in the Seattle Times not long ago, I think back in November, on the front page of the Sunday Times that talked about the cost to renters for parking. So when you look at missing middle housing, or when you look at, you know, the highest and best use of this site for housing, the garden style apartments with surface parking is probably the most appropriate use. The parking on site is going to be less obtrusive to all of the neighbors, whether they're upland or lowland. It's not going to have headlights shining into their backyards or into the restaurant that's next door. It's a better use. And when you add structured parking to a building like this, somewhat of it's going to be above grade, some of it's going to be below grade, and it's going to put pressure on the cost of this project to make it infeasible.
Okay, thank you. I don't have any other questions.
Okay, all right, Ms. Clenchin, any cross?
Yes. Mm-hmm. One second. Great. Good morning, Mr. Miller.
Good morning.
So I'm just going to kind of start from the we'll start from the top and work our way down. I have quite a few questions for you. But first, when you were describing your experience, you said prior to retirement. So are you currently retired?
I am.
Okay. All right. Just wanted to clarify. And you know, you described a number of types of projects. A lot of them were, you know, medical or senior living. Would that, do you recall that?
Yep.
Have you designed garden style apartments?
Not like this, no.
Okay. And in your other developments, did they I think you said there were some that had structured parking, 12 or 13.
Mm-hmm.
But you said 12 or 13 where structured parking was beneath wood frame buildings, and that was mostly senior living. Is that accurate?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Okay, and what were some of the reasons that you incorporated the structured parking in those other projects?
The primary reason was because there wasn't enough land to allow for surface parking. So I'll give you a couple of examples. I mentioned a project called Timber Ridge. It's in Issaquah. Mm-hmm. It's a large building, probably 950,000 square feet, 324 or so apartments on an 8-acre site. So it's...
Sorry, how many?
8-acre site.
8 acres? Yeah. And how many units?
324.
324 on 8 acres. Okay.
It's a vertical, maybe it's 9.5 acres or something like that. But anyway, it's a vertical building. So there's not enough room on that site for surface parking. It would always be a choice to have surface parking if you have enough site for it. So that building has a combination of surface and underbuilding parking, where surface parking is for visitors and some residents, and underbuilding parking is for other residents, for residents. And I should say staff as well. Heron's Key, a project down in Gig Harbor, is a 500,000 square foot project, 5-story wood frame on a sloping site. The majority of parking on that site is on the surface. There are some parking stalls in order to get to the required parking that we placed under one end of one building. And that was simply to get the required parking on the site. Mm-hmm. In this case, we don't have the required, the required parking for this site in Silverdale can all be accommodated on the surface.
Okay. Just to clarify, so you said before, though, I forget which one, but 324 units on 9.5 acres,
mm-hmm.
right? So me, I did the math, but 325 over 9.5, that would come out to about 34 units per acre, correct?
Yeah, if you did the math.
Okay. And do you know what the units per acre is for this development?
I could go quickly look it up for you, but I don't know off the top of my head. I think I don't know.
Okay. All right. Would it surprise you if it was relatively close to that number?
No.
Okay. But in that development, there was understructure parking, correct?
Yeah, it was a 10-story building.
10-story. Okay. And I'm assuming it had, elevators and things like that, right?
It did. So the elevators, in order to get good elevator service on a building that tall, you're going to end up with probably 2 elevators in certain areas that we also, in the lobby areas, I should say. And then we also had what I would call convenient move-in elevators at knuckles in the building that allowed people to park a moving van and move in and not have to transition long corridors to get to their unit. And also those elevators went down into parking and made it more convenient for them to get up into their unit.
Okay. You mentioned before that you haven't really designed a lot of garden style apartments, but could you explain to me what other types of apartment or multifamily structures you have designed? Are they condos, townhomes, things like that?
Don't do condos. Never okay. Do condos. No, they're all 3, 4, 5-story wood frame buildings.
Except this, the 10-story one that you referenced before.
Yeah, the 10-story one. Well, I also designed a 20-story project for MBBJ downtown Seattle, over parking.
Okay. How so? They're not garden style apartments, but how would you describe those other apartment buildings that you've designed?
I would describe them similar to what, well, they're a double loaded corridor, I guess is the best way to talk about it.
Okay, great. Double loaded corridor. Okay. In a section where you were asked about kind of what you look at when you're designing a project, you know, you mentioned goals and objectives and what is, you look at the zoning code, and you look at cost or constraints on site, right? Have you worked with, you know, I know they identify their goals or objectives, but have you worked with clients to kind of adjust a design on a site in order for it to be feasible?
I'm not sure what you mean, because when you look at the feasibility of a site, you're going to, so the very first thing that you would do in my mind is you're going to look at, okay, the site itself, you know, is it forested? Is it sloping? What's the access around the site? Do you, you know, that sort of thing. So you're taking a look at the site, you're looking at the environmental characteristics of the site. You have a program, you know, that I help develop with a client. So I understand the program. And then I start to look at what are the alternatives for how a site can be developed.
Okay. I guess my question is, you know, when you're working with clients and you're dealing with certain constraints, does the design, can the design change over the process, you know, as you're working with the client? Does the design frequently change based on constraints or code or design standards or things like that?
So design is somewhat fluid. However, okay. I would say that in the feasibility analysis that I do, we take the design to a pretty high level of understanding from concepts into, you know, or from blocks into concepts. And after the feasibility study is done, the design does not change significantly.
Okay, so do you do feasibility and then design, or design then feasibility?
It's sort of looking at both simultaneously. Again, because when you've got, you know, 40 years of experience like I have, that can rely on some of that experience and understand how a site might best be utilized. So again, what I would tell you is, as an architect that's been working with some clients for over 20 years, the same clients for over 20 years, I understand what it takes to start a design process and look at the strategy that they are, or the goals and objectives that they have that in their strategy, in their strategy document, look at the pro forma for what they think they can afford to build. And then I develop the concepts for that on a site. And that doesn't change, because if you start to miss the financial characteristics of the pro forma, it derails the project.
Okay. Yes. In a lot of your testimony, you talked about the feasibility for this particular project and this particular design. Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about whether there are other designs for this site that could be feasible. You know, and you mentioned a lot of your apartment buildings and things like that. You described them as double-loaded corridors. Based on, you know, say you were, your client came to you with this site with a gentle grade and waterfront views, in your opinion, would it be feasible to design a double corridor apartment at this location, this 5.3 acre site?
Would it be feasible?
Yes.
Uh, Well, you could put any kind of building on this site, theoretically, but you could put a casino on this site, I think, under code, under zoning code.
I'm talking residential buildings, right?
Right?
You
I could
could,
put, you could
wouldn't
put
you
a
agree
home.
you could design a multi-unit residential building on this site that would be feasible for this location?
You could design a multi-unit building on this site that would be feasible for this location. However, you cannot add the cost of underbuilding parking to that design because of the constraints of the site. So when I would look at feasibility for this site, I would say, okay, what are my options? Do I want to put a big, huge building with a parking garage underneath it? No, the neighbors aren't going to probably like that. Well, how am I gonna focus this building to the prevailing winds and the sun and the views? Well, I'm gonna probably put that building along the contours just like this one's done. So in my testimony, what I've said is that in my experience, I think this is a really great project for this site. Having walk-up garden-style apartments has the least impact on this site of any project that your multifamily project that you're going to propose without underbuilding parking.
Okay. But a lot of your analysis has looked at this particular design. Just to clarify, the applicant did not ask you to come up with any other sort of design or propose any other types of design alternatives that you thought would be feasible for this site,
That's
correct?
correct. That
Okay.
is correct.
Okay, so your review was limited to this specific garden style apartment, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. But it is possible that there are other styles of multi-unit residential apartments that could be on this site that would be feasible, correct?
I'm not sure about that
Okay, all right.
because you're saying that if yeah,
You
I
know,
could.
I'm asking if a client came to you and said, I would like a double corridor apartment building with the bottom level being under building parking in this nice waterfront district with views of the Sound and mountains on a 5.3 gently sloping site. Would you design something and would that be feasible?
I don't believe it would be feasible because the cost of the parking at $60,000 or even $30,000 per car would push it out of the range of rents that are available in the Silverdale area. So therefore, it wouldn't meet the pro forma and it wouldn't meet the goals and objectives of the cost of the project. So
Okay,
no, we
let's.
don't believe it would be feasible.
So this that 10-story 324 unit building that you were talking about on the 9.5 acres, that 35 units per acre, kind of similar, actually similar density to the proposed project here. But in that case, there was under building parking and that did pencil out,
Yeah,
right? Okay.
do you know
And
what
where was that located?
that was located in Issaquah?
Okay, and do you know, if rents are similar, and do you know have any information about kind of the base rents for Issaquah versus Silverdale?
Okay, so let me tell you about that project. You want to hear about
Well, it depends. I kind of want to know your answer before, but
Well, so it's not a rental project.
okay, what is it?
It's a continuing care retirement community. And the units in that building are sold, quote unquote, sold. And they are sold for, don't quote me on this because I don't know these numbers exactly, but I believe from anywhere from about $600,000 for a small one bedroom unit to about $1.2 million for an upper level. Great view, two bedroom plus unit. So it's not a comparable.
Okay. Okay, so that's a different style of ownership than what's proposed here, right?
Yeah, this is a rental,
right?
That was continuing care. And why I use those buildings as examples is because, in general, not that particular building in Issaquah, but in general, most of the work that I have done in senior living is wood frame buildings with either parking on grade or parking below building. And the reason I was asked to look at feasibility for this is because I understand the intricacies of what putting parking under a building looks like.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this continuing care retirement community mm-hmm. that you referenced, could that also be an allowed use or an acceptable use of the proposed site?
Probably.
Okay. There's some discussion where we were talking about the constraints on the site, you know, what you look at when you design the project. There's no forest on this site, right?
No.
Okay. And there's no, I guess what else did you look at? There isn't a steep slope on this site, correct?
I wouldn't characterize it as a steep slope. I think it's 4 to 5%.
Okay. And wouldn't you agree that that's kind of a 4 or 5% across a 5.3-acre site is a relatively gentle grade, correct?
Yeah, I've seen the site. It doesn't look overly steep to me.
Right. Okay. So what would you consider any, are there any, would you agree that there aren't really any constraints on this site?
There are constraints on this site.
There are or aren't?
There are.
Okay. And what are those?
Access is one. The aquifer underneath is obviously the most mm-hmm. important constraint.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's not constraints, but the opportunities, you look at constraints and opportunities. So mm-hmm. the opportunities on this site are views, access to sunlight, access to the prevailing winds, which come from the southwest. In the majority of the time, our winds come from the southwest. Sunlight all the time of the year, and the views. So, you know, I'm not sure where you're going with the question, but, you know, there are constraints that are, there are also opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's talk, I want a little bit about, I guess, opportunities. So there was some discussion about, you know, that the elevators for this build or elevators, the, and how it would present some challenges or things like that. Right. But, and you mentioned that it would increase cost, that elevators cost money, right? Okay. Would you agree that generally including an elevator increases the value of a building?
I would not agree with that, not in general.
Okay. Would you agree that having an elevator in a multi-unit apartment building increases the value or utility for the residents who live there?
Again, I don't think I would agree to that. I mean, I think that it's based on what, you know, the type of building it is and how tall it is. I mean, there are buildings all over the place, especially in Silverdale, that are all walk-up apartments. They don't have elevators. And again, so you're trying to create a project here that is consistent with the other projects that surround it.
Okay. Do you know of any other multi-unit apartment buildings in the vicinity of this project?
I know about a lot of them, yes.
Okay. One of the example nearby, there's a Krista Shores, right?
Yep.
Okay. Does Krista Shores have an elevator?
Sure does. Probably has multiple.
Right. Okay. You know, I understand that you say there are other couple of story buildings where there aren't elevators, but You also testified that, you know, if you were renting, a lot of people, if they're on the fourth floor, that you're not going to be able to rent the higher units because people don't want to walk up that many stairs, right?
I did say that, correct?
Okay. So wouldn't you agree? So yes, you can not have elevators, but wouldn't you agree that it generally is beneficial for people living in that building to be able to, you know, move furniture or take their groceries up or things like that? Wouldn't you agree?
You know, using the example of Krista Shores, I would absolutely agree with that. I mean, that's a senior living community. I'm very familiar with Krista Shores. Seniors especially need to have an elevator in a building like that in order to do exactly what you just said, move their furniture and also move, you know, bring in their groceries, as you said. Krista Shores, as far as I know, doesn't have an artesian aquifer underneath its footprint. All of the parking at Krista Shores is on grade. So, you know.
Are you saying there isn't an artesian aquifer under Krista Shores or that you aren't aware of whether
there? I'm not aware of it.
Okay, just to clarify. All right. So it is possible there could be an artesian aquifer under Krista Shores, right?
Not a hydrologist, so I don't really know.
Okay. All right. That's fine. Okay. Wouldn't elevators also, we were talking senior living, but even just people with disabilities, right? Wouldn't having an elevator make an entire building more accessible for people, maybe not senior citizens, but people with disabilities?
It would if you didn't have the ability to walk in off grade. So this, what's beautiful about this design as a garden style apartment is sitting on the grade like it does, is you have a number of apartments on the lower side that have a front door on grade right next to their parking stall. You have a number of apartments on the upper side that have a front door accessible right off their parking stall without transitioning any stairs.
So actually, I want to get to that a little bit. So you said that a couple of times where there are basically the lower two levels are accessible at grade. And so I'm going to bring up this is actually the building elevation. I believe it was from the previous hearing, but I just want to share this document. Second. All right. Are you able to see that image?
It's a little small, but yeah.
Okay, let's see if I can blow it up a bit. Hold on 1 second. I'm just going to move it to a different screen where we can get some better resolution here. Okay. Okay, are you able to see this drawing?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. And so this is, does this look like the design for the garden style apartments that you reviewed for this site?
Yes.
Okay, all right. And so this here we've got the three floors, right? And this, these orange doors, right? And stairwell. Yeah. And then you're talking about where you can access that floor from grade.
Right.
Okay. But you still have to go downstairs in order to access the lower grade, correct? Or the lower set of units.
Let me go look at the drawings and give you a real answer because I...
Okay, so this drawing here is the northeast elevation, and then here is the southwest elevation. So this shows us the building from the other side. This would be the side that looks towards the water, right?
Right.
Okay, and that would be, you know, it, as you characterized it, that there's that lower grade.
Mm-hmm.
But there are no doors on that lower grade or for the lower apartments there on that design, right?
Not seeing any, but.
Right. So would it be more accurate to say only one level of the building is accessible from grade? The lower one, you still need to use stairs.
Well, I'm not the author of this building, so I don't know mm-hmm. every exact detail, but I guess I would like to have Paul, the engineer and architecture firm that designed it, answer this question.
Okay. Okay, but based on these designs and what you're seeing here, only one level is accessible at grade that wouldn't require stairs, right?
Right, but okay. You're still only going up to the fourth level. You're transitioning two levels of stairs. I guess that's my point.
Okay. Okay.
Excuse me, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but what was the exhibit number, just for the record?
Yeah, right. So that was from the 2023 remand. Let me find you. I want to say, it's here. All right, my computer is being slow.
Didn't mean to stop you in your tracks. I just.
Yeah, no.
It sounds like we might talk about this drawing once or twice more.
Right. Second. Okay, so that was the 2023 record. I want to say there was County Foundational Exhibit, and it was the elevation. It might have been DCD 24, which is the elevation of the apartment building. Sorry, that I just had the excerpt. I didn't have the full document.
Okay. Again, I don't mean to stop you in your tracks. Feel free to move on, obviously.
Okay. I'll tell you what, I'll find that for sure and clarify which one that was. I think it's showed up a couple of different times, so I will let you know. Okay. Okay. Let's turn, I guess, a little bit. We're kind of on this discussion about elevators. Is it you mentioned that you didn't think it would be an elevator would be possible to go all the way up in this garden style apartment, right? Is it possible to have an elevator that goes all the way up in a different style of apartment?
Yes.
Okay. And then you also mentioned that you looked at, you know, you mentioned there are other garden style apartments throughout Silverdale. Do you know, do you know if any of those other ones were in the waterfront district?
I'm searching my memory banks, but I don't believe okay. unless they're older.
Okay. Is it possible that a lot of those other garden style apartment buildings are in other districts that don't have similar parking requirements for placing parking under the structure?
So I think the answer to that is yes.
Okay. And there's nothing in the design standards that shows a preference for garden style apartments in particular, correct?
No, but okay. there are preferences for missing middle housing in the comp plan and in the Puget Sound Regional Council, specifically for Silverdale.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. But doesn't the Silverdale comp plan also suggests a range of all different types of housing for different income levels, correct?
It probably does. I don't know it in that level of detail.
Okay.
You know that the comp plan does look at a range of, well, all housing. From mm-hmm. single family to attached duplex to fourplex to multifamily to, you know, basically they cover everything and they cover everything. But what's missing out of the stock of housing in Silverdale, and that's why you see so much of it being built, is that middle income, missing middle housing.
Mm-hmm. So you say you see so much of it being built. There is a lot of fair, in your opinion, would you agree that there's a fair amount of middle housing currently being built in the Silverdale area?
Yes.
Okay.
It's because the markets for it is so huge.
Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about kind of the markets and different levels of housing and rent and things like that. Wouldn't you agree that waterfront areas might command higher rents or values from renters?
Well, this project's not on the waterfront. It's quite a ways away from the waterfront. It has water views.
You are aware this is in the waterfront design district, correct?
I am absolutely aware of that, okay. But it does not sit on the water.
Okay. So wouldn't you agree that, an apartment building in the waterfront district with sweeping views of the Sound and mountains would command higher rents than maybe some other areas?
I think you could make that assumption.
Okay.
I don't think you could get higher rents for underbuilding parking, though.
You could get higher rents for this location, right?
So anytime you have a project, go ahead.
It was just a yes or no. You could get higher rents for this location with these views, right?
Well,
correct.
I'm not a market specialist.
Okay.
I would let them answer that question.
Okay, sure. But you did testify about average rents and things like that. Was that just based on information you'd been given? That's not your own professional opinion or experience?
That's been, yes, information that I've been given.
Okay. And that those were just averages. They didn't provide a mean, median, mode, anything like that, right?
I don't have that level of detail, so no.
Okay. Is that something that you would look at if you were designing a project for this site?
It's something that would likely be in a project pro forma.
Okay.
Because a project pro forma is going to look at, you know, what the return on the site is going to be, I guess. And you have to balance that, balance that with the cost of construction and all of the other soft costs that go. So, you know, basically mm-hmm. balance the achievable rents with
yeah.
cost of construction.
But you didn't do that for this project, correct?
No, it's not something I would do. I would rely on others for that.
Okay. There was some discussion about how, in your opinion, parking would be more visible if it were under the building. Do you recall that testimony?
Yeah, I believe what I said was if the parking structure is out of grade, it could be more visible. You know, not that you're seeing, you know, the cars as if you were flying over it, but you're going to be seeing the lights within the parking garage as they come on. You know, and they could either be on 24 hours a day, or they could be on when a car is transitioning through based on a sensor of some sort.
Okay.
And you may also see headlights from the cars as they're parking facing out.
Okay. But generally this underbuilding parking could be, the majority of it would be enclosed from view, correct?
No, I'm not sure about that, because you have to ventilate the parking garage.
So okay.
You have large openings, basically, they're screened in some way, but you cannot screen them. You cannot screen them entirely. You have to have a minimum of 50% open area on the screening to get ventilation if you are passively ventilating the garage.
Okay. And so that's just at the opening, right? At the door. The rest of it would be enclosed.
No, that is along the walls, all the way along the walls. So the west wall is, okay, let's say we have a parking garage. We've got a parking garage. And the west wall facing towards the mountains and the water, that's going to have a series of openings on it. And the cars are going to be parking head in to those openings. It will not be solid concrete. If it is solid concrete, then, or some other solid material, then you have to mechanically ventilate the garage because you don't have enough air movement.
Okay.
And that's quite an expensive added cost.
Okay. But it is, that is a potential design. You can have enclosed under building parking with mechanical ventilation.
And it's expensive to do.
Okay.
And then you end up with a blank facade, which is going to be, in my opinion, kind of an ugly building sitting on that site that the neighbors will be looking at.
Okay.
They won't be very happy.
But there are things that an architect or a designer could do to improve that facade, right? There could be landscaping, there could be design features, there could be things like that, right?
Yes, all of which are more expensive, but yes.
Okay. I'm just saying there are ways to mitigate that. Wouldn't you agree that, so you're talking about how, okay, you'd be able to see headlights. Neighbors can also see headlights from surface parking, right?
That is correct. However, okay. The surface parking, my understanding is that at the edges of the site, there's landscaping and fencing that would probably, I don't want to say prohibit, but mitigate how much headlight light you're going to see on grade.
Okay. And also, is your statement about those headlights and the visual impact of it, is that assuming that it's a two-story under building parking garage?
Yes, because I believe it's going to be two stories.
Okay. And so what if it were one story and a slightly larger footprint for that base under building parking, right? So that would be roughly the same. It would be sort of the same level as the current surface parking, right?
I'm not sure where you're going. So explain that one more time.
I mean, I guess I can bring up the exhibit. So, you know, I'm referring to...
Bring up the exhibit. Let me look at the exhibit.
see. All right, so I'm going to bring up, this is exhibit A8. And this is appellant exhibit A8. All right. Okay. Are you able to see this?
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, this is one of Mr. Adams' proposed, where the podium or the parking, it might be wider, but the building on top can stay roughly the same dimensions, right? And under here would have parking for, I believe, 40 spaces under this building.
Okay.
So if there were a solution like this, wouldn't you agree that the visual impact of the cars would be less than if all of those cars were a surface lot?
Yes, it would be less. However, there are other complications with this idea of how the building is set on top of the parking garage that I explained earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. But I'm just talking about the comments about the visuals and parking and the headlights and the visual impact of it.
Yeah, and okay. you still end up with a concrete or some other structure sticking up out of grade mm-hmm. that I think is less, in my opinion, less aesthetic.
Okay. But there are things that can be done to improve the aesthetics of that, correct?
There are.
Okay. And, you know, having that space can also open up access for things like patios or additional open space, correct?
You could put patios on top of that, but you already have patios on the garden style apartments anyway. And, you know, when I talk about the aesthetics, I mean, we can use Mr. Adams's photograph. I think it was the third one that showed what a parking garage looks like, all that concrete and podium. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't think it's the most aesthetic and desirable solution for this site, and it's certainly more expensive.
Mm-hmm. But it is also, underbuilding parking is one of the requirements in the Silverdale design standards for this district, correct?
Only where it's feasible.
Okay. And actually, I may want to get to, when we were talking about those examples that Mr. Adams showed, you had some comments about, here, I'll show this. This is exhibit A7. Okay. Do you recall your testimony regarding these buildings?
Yeah, that's the one I was just referring to.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Also, related to this, you made a statement about how this site, I believe you made a comment on the grade.
I think it was on the other sites, but go ahead.
Okay. You mentioned that it wasn't very sloped. Do you know, are you familiar with this site at all? Do you know the location?
I have no idea where that
is. Okay. So your conclusions about the slope on this photos, which is just based on the photos, right?
Well, I'm not sure it was on this photo, and maybe it was, but I know I made a comment about slope on the very first photo.
Okay. Okay. So it's based on the photo.
Yeah, based on the photo. It doesn't look like there's much slope.
Would you be surprised to learn that maybe is it possible that the slope on these photos is similar or greater to the slope that's on the project site?
I suppose it's possible, but I can't tell from the photograph.
Okay. Couple more. Mr. Examiner, we're at noon. I just wanted to check in about whether we want to break for lunch or.
Yeah. Oh, do you have about 10 minutes? If you just have a couple more, you might finish just in time.
It would probably be more than 10 minutes. So.
Okay. Yeah. If you want. Okay. Let's take our break then until 1:05. We'll see you then.
All right. Great. Thank you.